Good Tuesday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. It's October 22nd, 2024. We are taking you up to 5:45 today, a shorter show than normal. Typically, we're on the air till 6:30, but the Caps are playing right at 6. Pre-game starts at quarter till on the Fan in the 5 o'clock hour. Speaking of which, we've got Austin Eckler on the show at 5. We are live all over D.C. on 106.7 The Fan, coast to coast right now via the Odyssey app, and we are streaming video all over the world on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. If you want tickets to see Disturbed, we've got those at 4 p.m. Make sure you're listening, got your dialing fingers ready to go right at 4. Ladies and gentlemen, Danny Ruye.
What do you say, dude? Tremendous morning of pickleball this morning at the old Hooray household. Got folks over to the sport court in the backyard. My weighted vest was on. Yeah, that was going to be your follow-up question right away. I know that. I was wearing it all morning long. A really fun morning of pickle. Came here to hang out with my pal and talk about the local first-place football team. Not bad.
We will get to that first-place football team that is 5-2 in just a moment. And we will talk about them throughout the program, including in that Austin Eckler interview at 5 o'clock. I did want to mention, though, right off the bat, two Monday Night Football games last night. One, linear television, the other, the ESPN Plus app, but I think most people at this point probably have that app. The Ravens, you wouldn't know it by way of the score. They beat up the Bucs.
They're a little bit nasty. I mean, by the way, two onside kicks have been recovered this year, both against the Ravens. I can't get over that.
That's crazy.
No one gets them, except two times teams playing Baltimore. Dallas got one, remember the game we were watching, and then, of course, last night.
It is time to change that onside kick situation. Now you have to announce before you even do the onside kick that you're doing an onside kick. So any element of surprise is gone. The new kickoff is a win. We've had three kickoff return touchdowns. A lot more kicks get returned. But that is the downside for sure. It is time to go to the old 4th and 15 format from the spring leagues, including the XFL and now the United Football League, where you basically get one play. The NFL could put the ball wherever they want to. I think the 25 is probably the ideal spot. But it's a 4th and 15 play to start the sequence. If you get 15, you get the ball 1st and 10 from wherever you got tackled beyond the 15 yards. If you don't, the other team takes over right then and right there. It's the same, really, structure and format as an onside kick. You get it or you don't. The other team takes over and the game's over. The difference being an offense is on the field against a defense, including the best players on both sides of the ball, winning or losing the game for their teams instead of special teams.
So I love that in theory. A couple things I would do to tweak it. I know that's not the debate, but I would make it a little bit further than that, than the 15 yards. I might go 17 or 20 just to make sure that this is not a high likelihood of success. That's number one.
All right, so let's go 4th and 20.
That's the first thing.
I think we have to work back from how often or how easy do you want it to be? Do you want teams to be able to get the onside kick at a 10 or 12% clip? Do you want it to be once in a million? Do you want it to be it never really happens? Because if it's never going to happen, then we should just keep doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point of changing?
I like a 15% clip, which I feel like that happens.
So you could get some smart people together to get her?
Get them up there together.
I'm Frank the Tank, a nutter loss to get her. You could get some smart people together, and they could crunch the numbers to find out whatever percent you want, what should the distance be? And let's call it 4th and 19 or something.
I would do that. Second thing I would do, I would have to find a way. My number one gripe in the sport of football in general are 5-yard penalties that are automatic first downs. I can't have that. In other words, I can't have a defensive illegal contact penalty that's ticky-tack or whatever give you the onside kick and change a game that way. You know what I mean? Like, I hate it in general. A 5-yard penalty on 3rd and 37 gets you the automatic first down. That needs to be changed immediately. I couldn't have that on the onside kick play. I don't know what I would do instead. Maybe you get the 5 yards applied. Now you can do a 4th and 15 if it was a 4th and 20. But I would have to have that in there.
The Ravens are 5-2. They won last night by 10 points. Lamar Jackson's a 2-time MVP who's playing better than he ever has in either of those MVP seasons right now. Last night, a nearly perfect quarterback rating. Which, by the way, if that wasn't a perfect quarterback rating, let's try to refigure that algorithm.
Let's do it again.
5 touchdowns for him, 281 yards, 5 incompletions. He was very, very good throwing the ball, and he ran for 52 yards. Maybe the bigger story for the Ravens, though, because the Lamar thing is not new. We all knew that Derrick Henry was going to fit like a glove, and boy, has he. He is on pace for 2,120 rushing yards this year. One thing to be on pace for 2K, Danny. It's another to be on pace for well over 2K. And he's doing it in games where he's not running the ball a whole lot, too. Last night he got 15 carries. He went, I saw somebody tweet, like 67 minutes in real life without a carry last night during the game. In lifetime, not game time. And still managed 170 yards because he had an 80-yard run for the second time this month. And he was clocked at the third fastest sprint time of his career.
Yeah, when that knife-covered boulder starts going, he's as fast as anybody. It's a matter of, once his feet get turning. The only way to stop him is to make him change direction early. That's why they run those, a lot of off-tackle stuff. I think of some of the big runs, the big highlights. It's you're letting him get some degree of downhill going. And if his feet are going, good night. It's either business decision, truck stick, or he takes off for 50, 60, 70, 80 yards. It is the perfect fit.
Henry and Jackson are peanut butter and jelly. They are mint and chocolate. They are, what's my other favorite tandem? Goldfish and Coca-Cola Classic. The Ravens are the first team in NFL history to average 250 passing yards and 200 rushing yards over a 7-game span.
That's absurd.
What's your peanut butter and jelly?
My one seed's peanut butter and chocolate. That's the perfect combo. But
you're going to go full on like candy bars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that to me is euphoric. But I could borrow from Big Daddy. They go together like lamb and tuna fish. Lamb and tuna fish, remember?
That's definitely a very good one. The other game last night was not as good. I would say it was more competitive. I mean, the numbers bear that out. It was a 17-15 game. It was close throughout. But it just wasn't as aesthetically pleasing. In the end, the Cardinals get a kick at the horn from 32 yards to beat the Chargers 17-15. Kyler Murray threw for 145 with a touchdown and an interception. They did run for 100. James Conner on the ground, 19 for a bill. And then Murray added 64 yards and a touchdown as a rusher. So he made a bunch of plays with his feet, did enough. I thought from a Charger standpoint, what a missed opportunity for them. The Cardinals were playing their game. We always talk about styles make fights.
Yes.
That was a ground and pound, run the ball, no big plays from your opponent, first team to 17 wins. Tell me that's not what the Chargers wanted going into that game. And they got it, and they still lost in Arizona 17-15, despite Justin Herbert throwing for 350 yards. They couldn't score a touchdown.
Yeah, you said it very well. It's befuddling. If you just line up the stats and look at it, you go quarterback A, no turnovers, threw for 350 yards. Quarterback B only completed 14 passes for 145 with a 67 quarterback rating. Turn it over. I go, oh, well, they lost probably by double digits.
Not to mention, the Cardinals went 2-for-7 on third down. They got outgained by 60 yards.
It felt worse than that.
There were 10 more snaps for the Chargers offense than the Cardinals. Net passing, as you said, was 336 to 145. They committed, more penalties. Across the board, you just put this game into a computer, it spits out Chargers 24-13.
Yep.
And yet they lost the game. Although I will say, I love watching Dicker the kicker, Cameron Dicker kick. Dude hit a 59-yarder early. I didn't realize he's missed 4 kicks in his entire career. He's the most accurate kicker in league history, and he's got the leg to be good from basically 60 at any point.
How about that?
That guy is a weapon. And I shouldn't be jealous, because I'm watching these kickers now with a guy in D.C. that is 19 for 19 on extra points.
Just tied Mark Mosley for the most points ever through 7 games here in Washington.
19 for 20 on field goals. But I don't know that I got 60 anytime soon. I don't think I'm trotting him out there from 62-63. I just get sized, I know you do not, for the great kicking right now around the NFL. It's the best it's ever been.
That part's unequivocal. Like, kicking is now better than it's ever been.
Now you're not going to say you'd make 19 of 20 from 40 yards out.
No, I couldn't do that now. But kicking is not exciting. Kicking should be done away with, and it should be the way football used to be, where like one of the athletes on the field also had to kick. And to me, it should be less emphasized. It's gotten to the point now where it's not exactly analogous, but it's almost like velocity in baseball, where there's no Greg Maddux. There's no Tom Glavine. You know, those guys don't exist anymore. They don't get out of high school. Nobody wants to draft them. Nobody wants to develop them. No one wants to figure out if they can do it or not. It's do you throw 99? So that's all we do. And now every kicker can kick it from 64 yards. Every pitcher throws 100. There's no variety, which I think is kind of a shame.
Totally get that. What I love is watching great players do great player things.
Sure, I get that.
And here's an example. The home run derby for me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that's like boring or it drags on or it's too long. I could watch the best sluggers on the planet take batting practice for hours. To see kickers line up, I get psyched to watch kickers in pregame warmups when they're testing their leg. I just think that's cool. I like watching kickers in practice. I was joking earlier this year at training camp. I love a kicker competition where you just see
that
these two dudes that are some of the best on the planet going back and forth, basically playing horse, but they're kicking from 55, 60 yards. Like, that's awesome to me. But we're at a point in the NFL now where I think we're going to see a routine 60-yard field goal. Are you now at the 40-yard line? It's time to kick a field goal. Like, that is coming probably sometime early next season. When I was a kid, people thought it was crazy that if you got to the 30, the kicker was going to be good from 48. And now it's already get to the 40, and your guy's automatic from 58.
Yeah, that little line or that little zone that ESPN or some of the networks will show, where it's like, and that line now is basically midfield for half the guys, you know, where it's like, that's in his range.
To have a shot at the end of a game,
yeah,
quite literally, cross midfield, and you have a puncher's chance, probably like a 40% chance of him hitting a 63-yarder to send you to overtime or whatever. I think you'll take that.
I'll take it.
Before we get to the Commanders, as we mentioned, Caps hockey tonight. Starting at 5:45 with pregame and then 6 o'clock in our time slot right here on The Fan. They will be looking, Danny, for a fourth straight win. They're off to a great start. Tom Wilson has scored in all four games. We'll give you a full preview of this game before we get out of here tonight. But they're playing the Flyers in the Metro. Nice chance in conference, in division, to get two critical points tonight. And maybe most importantly for some of you, for Alex Ovechkin to string his goal streak to 2 in a row. As he tries to chase down Wayne Gretzky.
I'm very into that particular chase, you might be aware. I wish Philadelphia was undefeated so Washington could hand them their first loss. That's what Washington does early in the season. I don't know if you guys are aware. You happen to turn into a little Mighty Metal Sports, right? You can catch my guy Grant Paulson doing an altcast. You can also catch Washington handing teams their first defeat of the year. I love that when that happens. So it's a bummer that Philadelphia is 1-3-1 in last place in the Metropolitan coming into this one. And I'm being sarcastic, of course.
No alt cast tonight. Watch Joe B. in Locker. 6 o'clock puck drop. Of course, listen to John Walton right here on The Fan. Are you up on what they're doing for the Frozen Frenzy on ESPN?
No file.
They're staggering all the starts in the NHL tonight by about 15 minutes. Every single team will play. It'll be the second time that they've had all 32 teams.
Oh, it's a smart idea.
Now.
That's cool.
So they did it last year. It's ESPN's kind of brainchild. It went really, really well. They have like a red zone version of John Buccigross, who I talked to this weekend with on our altcast about what they're doing. But yeah, so every game starting, that's why the Caps game's early at 6. But starts right then, and then through the end of the night, 15 minutes apart, all 32 teams, 16 games, second time on a weeknight in league history.
Huge fan of leagues figuring out, especially ones where it's just a grind, make your regular season interesting. Make it matter. You have to do stuff like this, especially right in the teeth of football season. If you're one of the teams that's, or one of the sports that's unfortunate enough to try to compete in some to some degree to grab some attention from the NFL, you have to do stuff like that. Good job, NHL.
Just got a tweet here from a loyal listener, at Grant H. Paulson for me, at Funny Danny for DR. His name is Ben Standing. That's at Ben Standing.
Oh.
You may know him from his work as a beat reporter covering the Commanders for The Athletic, doing a great job on that gig. But he said, did you just say classic Coke and Goldfish? I assume the cracker is a great combo, like PB&J. So two things. One, I am talking about the cracker, to be clear. Now, it might also be a good combo to just munch down on a live Goldfish.
I wouldn't know. Like Jonah Hill and Wolf of Wall Street?
With Coca-Cola.
On the issue day. You do this!
You could go to... There's probably someone at PETA that wouldn't like this, but I'm sure you could go buy a Goldfish at PetSmart and maybe have it at the same time as you have a nice cold Coca-Cola Classic on ice.
Wouldn't go down as smooth.
But yes, what I'm talking about, those of you that are familiar, with the Goldfish cracker, it's a yellowish cheese-like color, crunchy, and the shape of a Goldfish. I'll even give you the specifics on how I eat it, because it's a very, very important way to eat it. I hold the goldfish by its
tail.
No. Never the tail.
You hold by the front?
I hold the goldfish top and bottom of like the rounded, coming to a point, the football-shaped face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like it's the football front with the tail on the back. I then bite down with the tail past my teeth to bite the tail off. When you bite the tail off, again, the pointy parts of the tail going in either direction are past the teeth line.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm essentially kind of ripping those off with my teeth. Now the cracker is almost circular, and it will come apart. You can split it then in half if you need to, like a peanut.
Okay.
You can then go right there and kind of split the two sides in half so the goldfish opens up. And the good thing about a cracker goldfish, there's no guts or bones or anything like that.
Sure, yeah, right.
But at that point, you just have two halves of the cracker. And that's how I eat every single goldfish I'll consume, right out of the bowl there. You're going down on the tail. If you guys need any kind of a video, I could maybe post one later tonight.
One quick, if I may. Doesn't that feel like a big old waste of time instead of just eating it? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes. If time is of the essence, sure, but I don't think it is.
Okay.
Normally, I'm sitting there watching a game.
This is a no-rush situation. You've got all day to eat these goldfish.
Oh, yeah. I would never be in a rush to eat goldfish.
Okay.
If I was on a TV show where I only had a certain amount of time.
Right, you got a handful.
Or it was a race, like you have to eat all 200 goldfish before Danny finishes his.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably rethink my strategy,
mm-hmm.
but I've never been in that situation. I'm always just trying to enjoy the goldfish the most possible. So,
what do you do with the tail once you've bitten and made the halves? You throw the tail
away?
Well,
it's not like a shrimp.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
It's not like you got to throw it away.
Well, you're treating it like one, though.
No.
Okay.
I eat the tail. So, again, the pointy edges, think of the back of the goldfish,
yep.
ripped off with the teeth, you eat those. Chomp those up and swallow those. You got the circular and a football-shaped remaining goldfish. That's where now we're going to split it in half, one and then the other. So it's basically, it's a three-part process. Tail, half one, half two. And to finish answering Ben's question, yeah, that combination's the best there ever was. Dating back to sixth grade, I would get home from school and I would enjoy a nice cola. I've now transitioned to Coca-Cola Classic because I'm extremely healthy. My body is my temple.
Yep.
So I'm away from Coca-Cola Classic to Coke Zero now. So I now do Coke Zero and Goldfish. But the idea is if you're healthy enough that you don't look like me and you can have Coke, then you should do that. Treat yourself.
I was also trying to think of what the best thing with Coca-Cola Classic is. I mean, obviously everything goes. It's a perfect beverage and I love it so much and I miss it every day. In terms of salty, crunchy snacks, the combo. I don't mean like the combination. I mean the actual foodstuff combos. Combos with Coca-Cola Classic. If on a road trip, you give me one of the giant bags. Not like, a single serving? No, this is a family serving, but I'm the family. Me. It's me. Hi, I'm the family.
I don't think I've ever eaten a combo.
I wouldn't expect it to be for you.
Is that the exterior pretzel?
Yeah. Pretzel on the outside, filling on the inside, whatever you want.
What's the filling?
Depends. There's a pizza one, which I don't know how much real pizza's in it, but it's got a little bit of pizza flavor.
It's not real pizza.
Yeah, I imagine they took a pizza and put it in there somehow. There's a nacho cheese one, which you would never eat.
No, I would not.
That's the best one. And there's a handful of others. They have a wide variety. It's the perfect road trip food. Easy to snack on, easy to grab. But that combo of combos and Coca-Cola Classic, I feel like I could do that and that would be my time.
So my answer is goldfish. But if you need me to go out of the box and give you a second item that goes perfectly with Coke as it kind of burns the throat, that fizz hits you going down, Cheez-Its.
Yep.
I'm a Cheez-Its guy. I love a good Cheez-It.
Of course you do.
And I think you're seeing kind of a theme here.
Yep.
The Cheez-Its are cheesier by nature, obviously, than the goldfish. Because I don't necessarily need the extra cheesy goldfish or extra any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want the traditional, normal goldfish.
Hard, crunchy, salty, a little bit of cheesy essence, yeah. Coca-Cola Classic.
Chips and dips, obviously reasonable as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the important part is something salty
yep.
with a classic.
That's right.
Coca-Cola.
We agree there.
Thank you, Ben.
Good question, Ben.
That question. That was a very good question. And that is how we do the Grant and Danny's, Tony's Mailbag. Or something like that. Next, I want to talk about Jaden Daniels and whether he's going to play against the Bears. Here's the question at hand. How would you handle Daniels this week if you were calling the shots? You can open up the phones, Darius. We will get to those next. If you guys want to hop in, you can. 800-636-1067. We're going to tell you how we would be handling Jaden Daniels. If we were running the show, you're listening to The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The status for Jaden, we'll put down as week to week. As you guys know, it's a rib injury, and we'll take him through, you know, all the steps at practice and assess how he's doing and keep working it through that. We're hopeful he can play, but we'll also make sure to take every precautionary step and do it smartly for the player and the man. And so I want to make sure I gave you all the updates that I had, and so it's not going to be something that's going to knock him out for a long term. And so, like I said, we're going to list it as week to week. And like I said, hopefully we'll play this week and we'll take it every day of it all the way through.
That was Dan Quinn yesterday meeting with the media. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Most people don't care about this kind of thing and they'll just be annoyed by me picking it apart. His description of what they're doing and how they feel is a day-to-day description. He called it week to week. Do you agree with that?
There were enough day-to-day tells in there where I go, it feels like it's even in between those two.
If it's week-to-week, then you're not hoping he's playing on Sunday and hoping he's practicing in the days before that. To me, week-to-week is he might miss a week or two or three. We got to figure it out. This week he feels like this. We'll see where he's at next week. That's what week-to-week is.
Mm-hmm.
Day-to-day is today he feels like he does, and tomorrow he could feel differently, and there could be a setback. So it's semantics, but when he first said it's week to week, as we're listening with bated breath and picking apart every word yesterday, my immediate reaction was, oh no, he's going to miss a couple of games. And then he comes back and says, but we're hoping he plays this weekend, and we'll see what he's able to do on the practice field this week. Oh, so you mean he's actually day-to-day?
Yes, so he's not going to miss a week, because next week we'll see how he's feeling, right? Yeah, within the next couple of days, we'll know more.
Now, I'm not telling you that he's going to play on Sunday. I have no idea. They have no idea. I think as of this moment, that is a complete uncertainty. But listening to Dan Quinn speak yesterday, just hearing what he said, he absolutely has a chance to play on Sunday. And we know that this player, this kid, this really, really tough athlete is going to do everything he can to convince them that he wants to play. So the question for you guys at 800-636-1067 is, how would you handle the situation and what would be the determining factor for you? Like, when would you say, okay, I feel good about letting you play, as opposed to, listen, man, I know how big of a deal this is to you, to not miss a game, to prove your durability, to be the leader on the field for the guys, to get us to 6-2, to compete against Caleb Williams in the 1-versus-2 matchup, in the battle of the two guys that are the most likely to win the Rookie of the Year award. I get how personally important this is for you. I know how vital it is for you from a team leadership standpoint, for the big picture of the whole program as well. But I just got to protect you here. We'll see you next week. What's that look like?
From The Life of Reason in 1905, George Santayana said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." I was here in 2012. We're going to be more cautious. I'm going to be cautious to the point that you all would be annoyed with me. He has, talking about Daniels now, it would be the highest threshold. He would have to prove all sorts of things to me to be able to play this week. I am leading as if I'm the head guy, if I'm the part of this coaching staff, etc. We're leading with no this week. We're leading with It's best for the long term if this dude does not go back at it this week. If there is not a single iota of discomfort, which I can't imagine given what he just went through this past Sunday, if there's not a single, he'll be cleared. But remember, clear to me is irrelevant when I'm talking about my franchise quarterback. Respectfully, clear is not irrelevant when it comes to my linebacker, my safety, my right guard, etc. This is the whole point. If this doesn't work, we're all out of jobs. I'm going to be way, 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 way more cautious instead of, you know, putting everything on the line for one more week at the risk and expense of maybe something else, development stunting, sort of career altering type moments. We're going to lead with no. If there is not a single fleck of discomfort in this injury, because there's a difference between nagging thing that happens to an NFL football player, like you bruised your shin or, you know, your foot got stepped on in a weird way, so your toe's not that comfortable. That's normal wear and tear. This is an injury that drove you from the game that now escalates beyond the come on in for treatment and sit in the cold tub, right? Like, that's a different level for me.
If we're using quotes, I'll see yours and raise you, Theodore Roosevelt saying, comparison is the thief of joy. I don't really care about Robert Griffin that much because he's not here. He's on Twitter and doing his podcast and whatever else. He's got a media empire and he's good at it. But this is not that. I wouldn't want my doctor looking at me saying, you know, 10 years ago, there was this one guy who, you know, kind of played the same thing, you know, had the same job as you. Not interesting to me. I would be ultra cautious because that's what you should do anyway. I would be ultra cautious because he's the face of my franchise. And I would be extremely cautious because players are always going to be pushing the envelope and needing to be held
back.
That's
who they are. Yeah, rightly so.
1,000%. For me, it's really, really simple. If he is 100%, if he can run every play in my playbook, if Cliff Kingsbury does not have to call anything differently, does not have to avoid any of the packages that he likes, does not have to keep Daniels in the pocket. I'm not calling read option because he might keep it. I'm not calling any boots because I don't want him taking shots on a rollout. I'm not calling any naked keepers on short yardage that have been stealing money on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 this year because I'm afraid he might get hit. If I can call whatever I want because he's able to run everything, because he's able to take shots, it's not going to hurt him any more than it would have last week, then he will play. And if he can't do all of those things, if he's not 100%, if he's not feeling like $1 million, if he's not able to run every play in my playbook, if I've got to be extra careful to keep him in the pocket and make him just a thrower, Marcus Mariota, come on down. And even if that means we got a worse chance to win and my team's going to lose, so be it. The next game's more important anyway because it's the Giants in the division trying to win the NFC East. That's more important and vital for tie-breaking metrics as it is. Doesn't mean it's not a bummer if Daniels doesn't play against Chicago, but that's my answer, Danny. He has to be 100%. We talked to Jay Gruden about this yesterday. In fact, Darius, grab that audio for me if you get a chance. But he basically is okay with a plan where they get him as healthy as they can all week long, Danny, and then they basically let him play in the game even if he's not 100% and just feel it out as they go. If it hurts, you pull him out, or if he's saying, I can't quite do it, you pull him out. I'm not playing that game at all. You're healthy or you're not. Like, binary. You're ready to go play football, and on the first play, I'm comfortable calling that same read option and you running in the middle of the field, or you're not playing. It's really simple for me.
Yeah, I mean, and just to go into the nuance of that, I think coaches are wired game to game, week to week. This is what I need to do to survive. This is a temporary leak. Whereas Jaden Daniels, respectfully, is going to be here longer, hopefully, than Dan Quinn. Jaden Daniels will be here longer than his OC. Jaden Daniels will be here longer than all the guys that are coaching him right now. Look at how regimes work. It's very rare that a coach and quarterback are together for 20 years. There's changes that happens. Organizations go through ups and downs, retirements, attrition, coaches leave, players leave. They need to be more concerned. It's a bigger thing than, we got Chicago this week. Coaches, players are going to tell you how fine they are, right? They're going to let you know, I can do it. So if, you know, Cliff Kingsbury doesn't think he's got to take anything off of his play sheet, he'll call that thing. And then Daniels will run that thing. I can't have that. The player, the pitcher, when the manager comes out to take the ball, the pitcher shouldn't be like, thank God you're here. Oh my God, was I waiting for you. Just floundering. I need to come out of this game now. He should be sitting there like seething. Take the ball from me. How dare you? Of course players should want to play. That's how you get to this level, is you have an innate desire and competitive spirit that you and I and everybody listening to the show cannot possibly fathom. You're wired different.
If they were 4-3, I think they might make a different decision or maybe view it differently, where you got to be a little more aggressive because now you're in the playoff hunt. You're in the playoff mix. If they were 3-4 even, Danny, and you're trying to keep your season going, keep it, you know, stay on track.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe. They're 5-2. This is a house money spot, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, and that will be a factor. So this was Jay Gruden on our show yesterday. You can listen to Jay every single Monday at 5 o'clock on Grant and Danny.
That depends on the backup. Marcus is a great backup because he's a veteran guy with a similar skill set to Jay. He can run, so you don't have to really change your game plan. You still have all the zone reads, the quarterback design plays, RPOs. Marcus can do all that, and he's a veteran. He's a pro. So he's a great backup to have in case something happens to Jade, and he proved it Sunday. You know, if you have a young quarterback that's your backup, you're a little bit shaky. You don't know what he's good at. You don't know what he's comfortable with, so you're a little bit more conservative. But I don't think Cliff was conservative at all. He proved that on the drive at the end of the half when they went 8 plays for 92 yards and a touchdown to go 20 and nothing. He just let it hang out, let him roll. And that's the benefit of having a veteran like Marcus.
That was actually him talking about how they called the game mm-hmm. the exact same way with Mariota in the game. And that does factor into the conversation we're having as well, because they're not going to have to change much. You might not be able to do things at the same level because Daniels is the superior player, but you've got a mobile quarterback who can run a lot of the same things. And if you're Kingsbury, whatever plan you're building for Daniels, you might just run with Mariota. But the question for you guys is, if you were in charge, how would you handle Daniels this week? How would you make the decision going into the Bears game as to whether or not he plays? And how cautious would you be with everything right now? Very positive, going in the right direction. But this is a huge game. This is a team, in the end, you might be fighting for a wild card spot with. And this could be the tiebreaker. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I think it depends on Jaden. You know, obviously Mariota will be ready to go, and you probably have to dress three quarter. I don't know how the third quarter quarterback thing works anymore, but I'd be talking to Jaden. If Jaden feels like he can go, and then keep an eye on him early in the game. I'd probably limit some of the quarterback design runs and his own reads and stuff like that, although that's what makes him very good. But he'll know how to protect himself. He probably won't break any tackles or anything like that. But I'd leave it up to Jaden and the trainer. The trainer says, hey, he's not risking anything long term. He's just going to play with some discomfort. Jaden says, I can do it. I'd let him go for a series or two, see how he feels. If he's ripping it, then let him roll. If he's struggling, then I'd probably pull him and make sure give him another week to heal.
Jay Gruden knows more about ball, played quarterback at Louisville and professionally. I'm not going to question his acumen, his knowledge. I do disagree with him on this, though. And that and a couple bucks will get me some coffee that I won't drink anyway. But this is not really up to Jaden for me, because I could tell you right now what Jaden's going to be saying. Now, I like that he included the trainer in that. But I am not doing a let's wait and see how it goes during the game. For what? It's year one. I'm ahead of schedule. I'm 5-2. No. If I have to wait and see, if there's any question about, let's see how it responds and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
No chance. You're just not playing. You either go through things this week that are game simulated, aside from the contact, and you're ripping throws and there's no pain and you're not writhing, you're not grabbing it and touching it like you were during the game, or you're not playing. I don't want to say I'm defaulting to sitting him, but I'm way closer to just outright saying, hey, we're waiting till the Giants, than I am feeling like I would definitely play him in this game.
I'm willing to drop a battle to save the war. I mean, that's to me what this is, right? It's a short-term pain, short-term bummer. I'm sorry you guys don't get your intriguing matchup in a game that got flexed for a national audience, but he is way too important. I'm not treating him like my rookie guard or my rookie linebacker or safety or something like that. This took him from a game where he had to go get street clothes on. I'm going to be extra, extra cautious.
I do feel a lot better based on him coming back to the sideline. Mm-hmm. You don't do that if you're hurt. The way he acted on the sideline after a touchdown, extending both hands in the air like an official, you don't do that if you have a broken rib. Coming off the field, I've talked about this a few times yesterday, but as he's walking into the tunnel, he's got both hands in the air doing the, like, give me more noise thing. He was obviously feeling pretty good. Now, for all I know, he was on Toradol or whatever they're pumping into him.
Right.
Some kind of Tylenol 6 where he didn't feel anything probably. But that did make me feel a little bit better. Let's hit the phone and see how you guys would handle it. Tony's in Long Island on G&D. What's up, Tone?
Guys, how we doing?
Good, buddy.
I'm doing great. First, I just got to say, it's been a long time since my Yankees have been in the World Series, so it's a great week. And I know, Grant, it breaks your heart, but Juan Soto is beyond special, and it'll be a crime if the Yankees let him leave the building.
Well, that would be a crime twice over, I will say.
There's a lot of crimes being committed.
They've been committed before, and they may be committed again. Scott Boras has something to say about that.
But I want to tell you who the real winners are, and that's the baseball fans. It's not anything to do with ratings. Baseball fans across the country have now been spared at staring at, aesthetically, the worst-looking fan base in the United States. Ugliest fan base in the United States, hand down, New York Mets. They are a group. And listen, I'm
going to
let you guys in on a New York phenomenon.
Yeah.
My wife has been asking me for 20 years, why are Mets fans so ugly? And I said, I have no idea. I can't explain it. You know, even friends, family, they're the ugliest people in my family. I can't even begin to tell you a phenomenon that cannot be explained in New York.
And with these new 5K TVs and high definition, Tone, we see everything. They zoom in on the fans for those reaction shots. We don't need to be seeing those gross people.
No, it's the land of misfit toys. Wow. It's like a Comic-Con event convention. I can't. Thank God we don't have to stare at them any longer. to going to Jaden Daniels, I think that the decision has already been made. And Danny, I am lockstep with you. This is not even an if, maybe, so. He's out. Period, end of story. Let the Bears think that he's going
to
play.
So you would just call it now, Tony. You would go to him and say, we're sitting you against the Bears. Get ready for the Giants.
100%. Especially that you know you have the Eagles and Cowboys not too far behind. You have to get ready for these games. And let me say this. If we do anything special this year as an organization and as a team, I think winning this Bear game without Daniels will be that inflection point, will be that moment where people will say, hey, listen, look at us. We were underdogs at home. Nobody respected us, even though we were 3-0 at home, playing great at home, and they made us dogs to the Bears just because we didn't have Jaden, and we beat them.
And don't forget, at that point, Tone, thanks for the call, you will have scored 30 on Carolina without him and been the best offense in terms of the numbers in the league this past week until Baltimore played with Marcus Mariota at quarterback, and then beaten Chicago's really good defense in that hypothetical. They play the Bears, then the Giants on the road, then they host the Steelers, and then it's Eagles-Cowboys. So 3 of 4 games right after the Bears are in the division. I don't need to sit here and pretend like people don't get this. You all do. If you're looking at import of games in this league, you start with divisional matchups. They're the most valuable. They're basically worth 3. Conference games are worth 2. Non-conference games are worth 1. You want to lose games? Find the AFC teams on your schedule. Those damage you the least. Then the conference game, then the division game. That's got to be a part of this. Just like their 5-2 record has to be a part of it, I think, as well. Kendall Crofton, you're on the Fan.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Hey, buddy.
So when I'm listening to the press conference yesterday, I hear him say week to week, and I hear him describe perfectly day to day. I want to know. It seems to me that he's better. It seems like he avoided any major injury. It seems like he's dealing simply with a pain threshold deal. So if it's a pain, because if it's a real injury, then it really is week to week, and we're not going to do anything. But he said that we're going to look at him every day. So it's about pain tolerance and not about risk of further injury. And so if he can go out there and not risk further injury, just deal with pain of something that's going to eventually subside, I'm playing him.
But I don't want him playing through pain. The optics aren't good. It doesn't look. And B, I don't know that it's necessary. If he could play at a really high level, sure. But it seems like an unnecessary risk to me. Plus, when you're playing through pain, you do things differently. You
know, this is what I was going to go to.
You start favoring it. You start trying to get outside of your norm. No, thank you.
Yeah, doing that changed Ryan Zimmerman's career. Now, again, I know it's different sports, and apparently we don't like bringing up other injuries, but that, to me, changed the arc of his career. Playing through some pain and discomfort caused him to throw a different way. Causing him to throw a different way meant that he couldn't raise his arm over his head, and he had shoulder problems forever. And he went from a Gold Glove caliber third baseman to has to play first base or DH or become a part-timer. That changed everything. I don't want to do that. I don't want any bad habits. I want nothing to derail this train.
800-636-1067. We'll push our fastest 16 minutes back to 325 or so, because I do want to hear from people on this. I know a lot of folks have strong opinions. We'll tell you what the team's plan is next, how they think they're going to best have a chance to get Jaden Daniels ready to go. Also, let's make a prediction. Will he play on Sunday? Because that's very different than actually what I would maybe do. How I feel about whether he plays and how I would handle it are not necessarily the same right now. G&D on the Fan.